Welcome to Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, to share some down-to-earth advice and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, this is a great time to call 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, along with our callers, some interesting research?
Yes. Doctor's compassion. If a doctor is perceived by a patient as being compassionate, they may get better quicker from their cold, and maybe it has implications for other diseases, too.
Isn't that interesting? What else?
Very interesting. Impulsivity in kindergarten. Does it lead to gambling in sixth grade?
Come on.
What? Lottery tickets. You know, those kids hanging out, you know, playing the horses, the whole thing. We're going to talk about impulsivity and gambling in sixth grade. Shocking, parents. Shocking.
What's our recipe?
Our recipe is banana fake cakes. Can't believe that you actually don't know what a fake cake is, but if you stay tuned for the recipe, you will discover what it is.
That one from Traverse City, Michigan listener Catherine LaPera. That's coming up in about 25 minutes or so. Here's our phone number again, 1-800-462-7413. Three. And Zorba, here's a listener now in Nashville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I'm having some problems with my left shoulder while I'm exercising, and I was hoping to get some advice on it.
Mm-hmm. What kind of problems?
Well, I'm recently started training for the military. I'm planning on doing their Special Forces program, and that involves a lot of pull-ups and a lot of push-ups and a lot of swimming. That's where I'm getting my problems from. And I'm just getting a lot of popping and a little bit of pain, but a lot of popping when I'm moving my left arm around.
Oh, well, best of luck.
Yes,
thank you.
Yeah,
yes,
and
yes,
thank you for your service to our country.
Right, very much so. Thank you. Now, let me talk about this. So when you say you're doing pull-ups and push-ups, how many pull-ups are you doing? How many push-ups are you doing?
Well, throughout the course of a day, probably around 600 to 700 push-ups.
600 to 700 push-ups.
Six or seven.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. And around 300 pull-ups a day.
So that's a lot.
Holy
mackerel.
Those
are a lot of pull-ups and push-ups. That's right. Tom and I are sitting here thinking, God, it's even hard for me to get my hand around one or two.
Yeah, I can do three, I think.
So
that makes for a long day.
I bet it does. So now, do you do this every day? Do you take off days during the week? What's your training schedule like? That's important.
It's usually about 5 days a week. That's with the push-ups and pull-ups, and I swim about 6 days a week.
Okay. So there are a couple of things that are going on. First of all, what happens is that the shoulder joint is a very interesting joint in that there's not much bone around a shoulder joint. You take a hip joint, and the hip joint has a lot of bone and protects that joint. But a shoulder joint is basically protected by the muscles around the joint. In other words, the joint is very shallow, and the muscles produce, if you will, the architecture around the joint. And that's so that's a very important issue. Now, when the muscles hypertrophy and get larger, we have stronger muscles. But one of the problems is sometimes they also hypertrophy or gets larger on the inside and can push on the tendons and the nerves and produce inflammation.
Mm.
And
okay.
So what you basically have at this point is overuse syndrome, not at all dissimilar, pretty similar to people when they work in a factory and when they're doing repetitive work. Carpal tunnel syndrome is a good example of overuse syndrome. Tendinitis that people get when they're on an assembly line and they're doing the same thing over and over, hour after hour, is the same thing. It's really a ligamentous nerve type of problem. So what you want to do is figure out what is it in your routine. So one of the issues in the routine that sometimes works is instead of doing it 5 days a week, you do it 3 days a week. In other words, You may work out just as intensely, but you give your body 24 hours to rest in between, and sometimes that does it. Mm-hmm. That's what I would do as step one, is I would say, okay, it's every other day I do my upper body. When I swim, I'm not going to be aggressive because I'm looking for core strength. I'm going to give my shoulder more of a relaxation when I swim. That's option one. Option two is, if that doesn't work, is cut down on the number. Because what happens is you've got too much swelling, if you will. You've got a compartment syndrome where you're pushing on the tendons and ligaments, and it's from overuse. And frankly, you don't want to have to go through surgery where they open it up. It's not something you want to do because the rehab is just takes a long time. It's not good. It's really the overuse that you're
doing. I have a question. I know Special Forces are the most demanding part of the military, but do you really need that amount of strength?
Well, I find it better to be overprepared than to be underprepared.
Absolutely, 100%. And that's exactly it. You want to be overprepared because you want to make sure your muscle is there when you need it, at the moment that you need it.
Right, exactly.
I mean, you've got to be able to move out of a place or do something, and you don't have a chance to say, well, can I do this or not? You have to do it. But what's happening is you're training too hard. So the space in between is what's going to make the difference, number one. Now, you can also try anti-inflammatories such as two Aleve over-the-counter tablets. They're all the same, 220 milligrams twice daily. See how that works, but the training is the way to go. Good luck. Thank you so much for your service to our country.
Well, thank you very much for your help.
And thank you so much for the call. Lots of thank yous going on at 1-800-462-7413. While Zorba and I are in a good mood, you'll want to call us right now at 1-800-462-7413. On we go, Zorba, to Wichita, Kansas. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
Got a situation where I'm dealing with what some doctors are calling rosacea, but nobody has really given me a diagnosis for it.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like if I eat too much food, at one time, and if it results in too much material in my intestines, then my rosacea will flare up. So what I'm thinking it might be is something to do with my intestines, because I've heard of leaky bowel syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a possibility that there might be something wrong with the lining in my intestines that's allowing certain items to leak out into my system and, you know, becoming an eliminatory effect in my face?
Yeah, before you answer, Zorba, is this common that rosacea is difficult to diagnose?
Well, first of all, it's common that we have red rashes on our face that are sometimes difficult. I mean, dermatology, we used to say you can't cure them, you can't kill them, and they keep on coming back.
Yeah.
That was the old phrase. So what does your face look like? You haven't described it yet. What actually happens?
Around my cheek area.
Yeah.
I'm always red. You know, it's not always.
You're always red. Have you been on medicine at all for rosacea? Rosacea, right, by the way, is sometimes called adult acne. It's not acne, and it's a red face, and it can produce problems. You can get a larger nose with it. W.C. Fields had a bad case of rosacea. We don't have color photos of him because they hadn't invented them, but his face was quite red all the time. But a lot of people have rosacea. It's pretty common. So you've been on medicine, Metrogel. What have you been on?
Well, what they've given me is ketoconazole,
antifungal. Okay. Okey-doke. Okay.
And then they've also given me a azelaic acid cream for antibacterial, I guess, antimicrobial.
And that's used for regular acne. Did it do anything, by the way?
The antifungal seemed like it had a mild effect.
Uh-huh. Okay.
The azelaic seemed like it did a better job.
And you were on it for how long?
Azelaic I've been on now for about a month. Somewhere in that neighborhood, and then they also gave me desonide cream for any kind of inflammation or swelling.
Mm-hmm. Is there
so any, that's what I've been doing.
Is there any connection, Zorba, between intestinal issues and rosacea?
Yeah, well, there definitely are issues that have to do with how we digest things. There's no doubt. So first of all, leaky bowel syndrome does not exist. You don't have food that leaks out of your bowel into your gut unless you have an acute appendicitis and the appendix has ruptured. So if your bowel is leaky, you are dead, or you need surgery right away and antibiotics. So we know you don't have that. Because outside the intestine, it is sterile. And when it's not sterile, we are sick. So there's nothing leaking out. But you can get a red flush and a red face from a variety of different foods that definitely affect it. Alcohol people drink and their face gets red. Hot food and their face gets red. You know, these are things that are basically coming from the gut. So there are certain things that can clearly disturb this. And you may have a combination of things. Old Dr. Kellogg, who I worked with for a number of years, who's 90 years old and recently was out camping in Montana, killed a snake in the middle of the campgrounds with a gun.
That's really
interesting. He did it. 90 years of age. Old Dr. Kellogg, who had been World War II in Korea, said, you can have fleas and lice. That was an
What's
old phrase.
What's that got to do with
that? That means you could have two things. You probably
hit on it right there. Going back to what you were saying about food, it's the weirdest thing. I can drink certain types of wine, and they improve my rosacea, which is counteractive to everything I've read about alcohol. But if I go out and I have a rum and coke, I can guarantee that within a day or two, I'm going to have some issues because it seems to slow down my digestive process. And then if I have, you know, everybody says, do green tea. I do green tea, and it aggravates it. If I do a cup of coffee, not a problem. So it's the reverse on some of the things that I'm reading.
Right. So here's my recommendation. Yep. There are a couple things. First of all, you should be treated with rosacea. What you ought to do is take doxycycline, an antibiotic, 100 milligrams twice daily, or minocycline, 1 or 200 milligrams daily, and take it for 2 months. Get the rosacea cleared up. Do it the right way. Do it with the antibiotic. We use it. It also works for regular acne. Forget the topicals. You can use them in addition, but you've got to treat the rosacea. Then, if you continue to have the flush, find out which foods are causing it. That's what you do, and you avoid those foods. If you're avoiding too many foods, there are other ways to treat it, but generally there are 3 or 4 or 5 foods that bother people, and just don't drink them. If a shot of tequila causes you to flush, don't drink tequila. Go to a rum and coke, like you said, and that's what you want to handle it. I think you've got fleas and lice. I think you've got two things going on.
Now, what were those two medications you said
doxycycline. You need an antibiotic, doxycycycline or minocycline.
Yeah,
Thank you so much
for the call. At 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. So, Zorba, there's been a study showing that doctors who are compassionate can help their patients get over colds faster?
That's right. Absolutely. It turns out that doctors are probably as good as any drug we have on the market to get rid of your cold. You go into the doctor, you're just in the doctor's aura, and you get better. It's very simple. It's very simple.
Well, what's
and this? I'm going to make money on this. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to advertise myself as Dr. Compassion, and then people will come into the office, pay me big bucks, and they'll get better.
Well,
tell
us about the study.
You seem
a little skeptical.
No. I'm actually not skeptical. But they looked at, this is in the state of Wisconsin, 350 people who had three types of encounters with their doctors and rated them as to whether or not they thought they were compassionate or not. Rated them. So, These are the ones who were rated. Some were rated high, some were rated low, some were rated as compassionate, really connecting with me, some were rated as not compassionate. Mm-hmm. And the patients who gave their doctors perfect scores in the survey got rid of their colds 1 full day sooner than the doctors who gave lower scores. So they scored their doctor higher, they got better sooner.
Why do you think that is?
Well, maybe the people who scored their doctors higher are different than the people who scored their doctors lower. Maybe the ones who scored their doctors higher came into there and said, I'm going to get better and I like my doctor. They're going to give me advice. And because the doctor doesn't do anything for cold, I mean, there's nothing we do that gets rid of the cold sooner. They felt better. Maybe they were a different group of people. Uh-huh. And maybe the people who scored their doctor lower were just different. They were angry. They're upset. Maybe they had depression. And those people were not going to, you know, get rid of the cold sooner because they still have symptoms. You know, you've had colds.
So, you know, positive thinking may be better than negative thinking.
I think this shows us that I think that's what it shows. I think it shows that positive thinking makes a difference. I think Norman Vincent Peale was right. The power of positive thinking. I think makes a difference. And I'll tell you something. My dad loved Norman Vincent Peale. He read all of his stuff. He loved it. And he was a positive thinker. And he never, when he had a cold, he said, it doesn't bother me. I'll just go to work. And he never took off. I don't think he took off a day for the last, I mean, he worked from the age of 17 to 87. Yeah. I don't think the last 30 years he took off a day from work. So positive thinking matters.
Yeah.
But compassion matters too.
I'm going to have to find me one of those compassionate doctors.
Be careful, Tom, or I'm not going to give you an appointment.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. And a listener now in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine. What's up?
So as I understand it, running can be hard on the knees over time. And I was wondering what someone can do in their early 20s to kind of ensure the health of their knees as they get older.
Mm-hmm. Stop running.
Well, I'll tell you something. Running is not bad for your knees. It's bad for some people's knees.
Okay.
So let's put that in. And running is easier when you're 20 and 30 than when you're 50 or 60. Now, if you've never run, you've never jogged, and you start running at the age of 60, your knees are still going to hurt more, having nothing to do with the running, but having to do with the fact that, you know, you just get osteoarthritis as you get older. All animals, from dinosaurs to insects, get osteoarthritis in their joints. That's what they've shown. They all have joint arthritis in some way. So there's been a lot of research on this because the research has been, well, does running matter? Does jogging matter? Does it matter whether or not you played football or soccer? Are we looking at the fact that we're really injuring our joints? And my read of the research is that short of a major injury, in other words, having an injury and destroying a cartilage, running is not bad for your knees. Now, that assumes it's the right shoes. It assumes it's not always on concrete. It assumes you vary what you're doing and your muscles are strong. In other words, your muscles are taking the brunt of the pounding when you're actually running. Then there's the concept of overuse injury, which we just talked about. And overuse injury is where you're doing so too much. So people who run 60 to 80 miles a week, you know, people are really long-distance runners, they are more likely to have an injury, just like a factory worker is more likely to have an injury from overuse. And that's different. It's really not a – it's a multiple issue. But those people are really pounding their bodies. So at the extreme, it might be there, but not if you're 20 miles a week or less. How much do you run?
About 4 to 5 miles – 3-4 times a week.
Yeah, I think you're well within a realm.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any evidence that you are going to do yourself damage. And I don't think there's any evidence that taking glucosamine or chondroitin sulfate is going to make a difference either. Now, you have good shoes?
Yes, I do.
Good. Where do you run? You run on dirt? You run on concrete? What sort of surface do you run on?
I like to run outside in a park, occasionally in the neighborhood, and then if I'm desperate, on a treadmill.
That's exactly the way to do it. It's the variation that makes the difference, because with overuse injury, it's the repetitive injury that you're doing the same way over and over and over again. And it's the variation in terrain, how you run, how quickly you run, faster, slower, and so on. Stuff that's really interesting to the body is going to be stuff that's going to be more likely to maintain your knee.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. You're welcome.
We appreciate the call. Thanks. Before we get to the recipe, Zorba, let's take a quick question about sunscreen from Keith in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. He'd like to know if sunscreens have a shelf life, or more specifically, if their UV protection declines with age.
I think sunscreen sort of lasts forever. I mean, I don't think it does have a shelf life. Now, anything that has a chemical in it by FDA standards often is given some sort of a shelf life. But if it doesn't have an expiration date on the bottle, it lasts forever. I mean, that's my assumption. Now, there may be some that deteriorate with time, but I think if you look at sunscreen, it's put in a bottle that is usually not clear, and that's really to protect the contents of the bottle. So, yeah, you can use sunscreen. And what I'd like to know is, you know, is did he get a deal on sunscreen? Why does he have all this sunscreen in his closet?
Well,
that would be a question.
Well, it could be that he got out in the sun 20 years ago, and he hasn't been out in the sun since.
That's right, and he wants to use his sunscreen. Exactly.
If you're wondering if something in your medicine cabinet is safe, or if you just have a lifestyle question for the show, send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Now, after the recipe, we'll have more of your calls. We have some more really interesting research to talk about. We have our medical myth buster right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. We have callers waiting, but an open line for you right now at 1-800-462-7413. We'll be back to the phones after our recipe, which is coming up right now. And for that, we welcome Traverse City, Michigan listener, Catherine LaPera. Catherine, hi.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you?
Awesome, thanks.
Now, banana fake cakes. What's fake about your recipe?
Well, I don't think they're really like a real pancake. But they look like a pancake, and they taste like a pancake, they feel like a pancake, and you can flip them like a pancake.
And what is there about them that's not a real pancake?
Well, instead of making a typical pancake batter, there are a couple ripe bananas sitting out, so I mash those up, mm-hmm. threw some eggs in them, mm-hmm. just a like tablespoon of flour and a little salt and baking powder, and mix them up, do them on the stove, and voila.
Now,
like a pancake.
Is this an original from you, or did you steal it?
I don't know if anyone else has done it, but it was early one morning, and my husband and I were hungry, so I just made it up.
Ah, wonderful.
That's the best way to come up with recipes. You go, hey, let's do something that's going to be fun. So how long have you been making fake cakes?
For about the past year or so. It's a nice treat on the weekends. My husband will make lattes, and I mix up the banana fake cakes, and we've got the timing down pretty well. So when he's finishing up with the lattes, I'm finishing up with the banana fake cake.
Sounds wonderful. And this is delicious. We're going to talk about all the spices. Now, your favorite spices to add are what? What are the things you really like to add to this?
Well, I love cinnamon, and I think cinnamon and bananas go together so well. I put cinnamon on almost anything, though.
Cinnamon. Right. You've never met a cinnamon that you haven't loved. That kind of a thing. So,
right.
Well, let's start out with this, and we'll go through. You start out with two bananas. Now, are these overripe bananas, little ripe? Does that make a difference?
I really haven't noticed it makes too much of a difference. If they're really ripe, you get more of the banana flavor.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. You know, but when bananas are more ripe, they definitely taste sweeter. They're mushier and they're sweeter.
You don't want to eat an overripe banana.
No. But they're really they definitely are sweeter when they're finally there. The carbohydrate turns into sugar. I mean, that's clearly mm-hmm. what it does. But you know, it's funny because when an apple is overripe, you don't want to eat it at all.
Right.
You know, it's not as if you do that. But with bananas, so start out with two bananas. Next ingredient are two eggs.
Two eggs?
Yeah, but first you really mash up the bananas pretty well, and then you add the eggs.
So you put the bananas in, you mash them up, mash as much as
right.
you can.
Yeah.
Add a one tablespoonful of flour, a pinch of salt, and then you put in the two eggs, right?
Well, all the dry ingredients first.
All the dry ingredients. So I use a pinch of baking powder, just a pinch. Big pinch, small pinch?
It depends. How early in the morning it is.
It depends on how
Wait
early.
Wait a minute. Do you use a big pinch earlier or a small pinch earlier?
I love it.
Do a bigger pinch earlier as I'm, you know, groping around the kitchen looking for the ingredients.
Such a Tom question. A teaspoon of vanilla, which is optional. I think everybody loves vanilla.
Right.
And then we talked about spices, cinnamon, cardamom. Sometimes it says use orange peel or in there, fresh cherries that you put into.
Yeah. And I just did cherries this past weekend. We technically live in the cherry capital of the world.
That's right.
And the cherries are... The local cherries are now available.
So. Ooh, it's always good when
Wait a minute. I thought Door County in Wisconsin was the cherry capital of the world.
Well, we just had our national cherry fest last weekend, so you might have
If you have a cherry fest, you must be the cherry capital of the world.
That's what they say. That's all you need is a big festival.
See, we've got the fish and potato boil, and they've got the cherry fest. Okay. That's what it is. Okay, so prepare a hot skillet. So you start heating up the skillet. Mash the bananas with a fork, as you said, mix in the dry ingredients and the spices. Once combined, then you add the eggs, beat them together with a fork, and the mixture should now resemble a typical pancake batter. And then you stir in any of the add-ons, fruits, nuts that you can put in, walnuts, coconut flakes, fresh fruit like blueberries, or like you said, cherries in there into the mixture. Let it sit for a minute, and then pour a quarter of the batter into the hot skillet, and then flip it when the cake is dimpled and steaming. That's about 5 to 8 minutes, depending on it, and then cook for another couple of minutes on the other side until all the batter is used. You should have 4 to 6 small pancakes. Serve serve warm with fruit or a topping or jam.
That sounds delicious, doesn't it?
I think this sounds absolutely great. I still don't know what's fake about it, but I think it's good. Doesn't sound like it's fake to me,
well,
too.
Well, not Bisquick, I guess.
It's not Bisquick. There
that
we go.
That makes it fake.
That's the fake stuff.
The real fake, right?
There we go. The real fake. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. It sounds delicious. We're going to try it.
Awesome.
Good. And for sending us this winning recipe, Catherine gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt-Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor on Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
If you'd like to talk with Zorba, you can call us right now at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, we move along to Granite City, Illinois now. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help you?
I had a question related to hand sanitizer. During the school year, I work in a building of about 700 people, and I had to take their IDs. And one day while I was taking IDs, a resident had told me while I was using the hand sanitizer that it was pointless for me to use it, that either I was just spreading the germs around or that just overuse of hand sanitizer doesn't work. Hmm. I was wondering if there's any truth to the overuse of hand sanitizer.
I think that's a really interesting question.
Yeah, it is. Now, what did the resident look like? Was this a scraggly resident who was kind of dirty and had flies around his head? or was this a well-appointed resident who came in with a suit and tie and had their hair perfectly coiffed?
You're standard college student.
Standard college student. Standard college
okay.
student.
That's we've got the image.
That speaks for itself. Well, we are, from a broad point of view, we are nuts in our society about germs. We're totally nuts about germs. So, first of all, let's put it that way. The Brits, they're not nuts. The French, oh, by no means are they nuts at all. The Eastern Europeans, forget it. And the rest of the world doesn't pay attention to that at all. So, where do we find the balance between there? And there's some issues because we now use antibacterial chemicals in spas and hot tubs, supposedly to stop spreading germs. So let me put this to answer. You are coming into contact with lots and lots and lots of people throughout the day, and some of them have bacteria on their hands. Strep, staph, they may have viruses, but they do have a bunch of stuff. And when they pick up their card, that stuff is on their card. And when you take the card and you swipe it or you touch them, you actually are getting bacteria on your hands. So I think reasonable use of a hand sanitizer cuts down the risk that you will have bacteria on your fingernails and then scratch your nose. Mm-hmm. And that's the portal of entry for lots of viruses. What happens is we've got it on our hands or a fingernail. We scratch our nose and the virus goes, aha, I've got a warm, moist environment. I'm going to go into that body. Mm-hmm. So I think reasonable use is there. You are not spreading it, by the way, by putting on the hand sanitizer. That's for sure. But I think reasonable use. And I think doing it when you go, hey, my hands are a little bit dirty or they feel like they're, mm-hmm. you know, they're like that, use the sanitizer. The sanitizer actually does a much better job than soap and water. You know, it actually does. Yeah. And I use it about 4 years ago. I started to use it in the office. And at first, people would look at me like, well, you're just putting lotion on your hand. They didn't accept it yet. Now Society has accepted it. But now it's like everywhere. So how long does it take you to go through a typical bottle of Purell or whichever one you use?
They just have a full bottle at the front desk, so they just refill it. I probably use it at least once a half hour.
Yeah. So wait a minute. Once every half hour you use it on your hands. That's fine. But some people use it every other time. That's crazy. Well, they may have obsessive compulsive disorder, which is not crazy.
Yeah, right.
It's a problem. I don't mean to demean that. But using it between every other one is not gonna be benefit. Once every half an hour is fine. So the next time that college student comes by and says you don't have to use the hand sanitizer, what are you gonna say to him?
You're crazy.
thanks a lot for the call.
Thanks, guys.
Sure. Now, I have a question for you, Zorba, on the same topic. Do the sanitizers really kill 99.9% of all germs like they claim? And if they do, why can't they just kill the remaining 0.01%?
Right. That's a good question. Well, first of all, what they can say on the sanitizer, they're regulated under the FDA Pure Foods and Cosmetics Act. So they're under the cosmetics section.
Mm-hmm.
That's different.
So they can say whatever they want.
You bet. On the cosmetics side, they can say use hand sanitizer. It'll make you look 10 years younger. And they don't have to prove it. So when they say 99, it's like, you know, Ivory soap, 99.9%
pure.
99.44%. 100%.
Oh, yeah, right.
What's that? Pure what? Pure lard? Pure what? It's pure because it floats. Remember that? It floats.
Pure
in the bathtub. Well, it was advertising. People used to take baths and they saw ivory and it floats. It meant it had air in the soap.
Yeah.
That's all it was. So they can claim what they want to because it is a cosmetic, even though it isn't.
Well, we can claim, and it will be true, that you can call 1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for Dr. Zorba Pastor. 800-462-7413. Here's a listener now, Zorba, in St. Augustine, Florida. Hello.
Greetings.
How can we help you?
My question is, people are very much aware of the problems of elevated blood pressure resulting from unusual salt intake. My problem and concern is, what about a teenager who seems to like, pre-teenager, a lot of salty things like capers and olives? Mm. Is there any health problem coming from excessive use of salt?
Mm. Who's your teenager that you're talking about?
It's my granddaughter, but she didn't want me to tell.
No, we won't tell anybody else.
Yeah, now, okay. Is your granddaughter a public radio listener?
Yes, she is.
I love it. Training them early. That's what counts. This is an interesting question because we don't know whether or not the consumption of salt leads to high blood pressure. There are some theories that it does, and they have never, ever been proven. We know in a society, our society, that has that uses more salt, there's more high blood pressure, and we know about 10, 20%, maybe a quarter of the people who have high blood pressure are salt sensitive. So if they cut down on their salt, their blood pressure is in control. But we don't know if it causes it. And the issue with teenagers is, as you know, they tend to eat high fat, high salty. They like sweet foods. You know, it's a typical sort of teen diet. So, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with eating capers and olives, unless you're eating it to extreme, and I can't imagine how you could eat capers to the extreme.
Yeah.
You're more likely to get your salt from the chips. You know, that's where you get most of the salt, from chips and prepared foods. Now, getting back to your granddaughter, what does she like to put capers on?
She eats them by the teaspoon.
She eats them by the teaspoon?
Mm. Yes.
You mean like she'll take a teaspoon?
A bottle of capers and serve herself several teaspoonfuls.
Several teaspoonfuls of capers. That's pretty unusual. What about the rest of her diet?
She eats an excellent diet, but I was always telling her that I was afraid when she ate so much salt that each cell would fill up with so much water and then she'd get more cells.
No. That is not the case. That is what we call an old grandmother's tale.
I know, but this is an old grandmother.
But maybe there's no harm in telling the granddaughter that, if it works.
If it works.
Well, we'll just have to say everything in moderation.
Have you, Zorba, ever eaten capers to excess?
Oh, I love capers. I just love them.
I got to say, I've never eaten capers to excess, and I never will.
But I don't eat them out of the bottle, so.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you so much. We really enjoy your program.
Oh, great.
Bye-bye.
Zorba, time now for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Not too long ago, we were chatting about corn, you'll remember. Well, Susan from Iowa took issue with your claim that corn is a vegetable, not a grain. Here's Susan. Since the term vegetable is not a scientific term, but simply refers to edible parts of plants, corn can be said to be a vegetable. However, corn is a grass whose seeds are corn kernels, a grain just like wheat, oats, and rice. My family grows corn in Iowa and would chuckle and shake their heads to hear you say that corn is not a grain. This reminds me of the time my pediatrician told me to give my baby graham crackers because they were made from graham flour, not wheat flour, which many children have an allergy to. Well, Graham is the name of the man who first made graham crackers, but they are made from wheat flour. I enjoy your show. Keep up the good work.
You know, it's always important for Iowa, which is next door to Wisconsin, to correct Wisconsinites when they're wrong about their grains. So I won't take that with a grain of salt, but I will take that in a serious manner, and thank you very much.
That wraps up this edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Send in your rebuttal for our next edition in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
More coming up here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health, more of your calls, some really interesting research right away, and of course our medical myth buster here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark here with Public Radio's favorite family doc, Zorba Pastor. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. But before we take our next call, what's this, Zorba, about impulsivity in kindergarten predicting gambling behavior in the sixth grade?
That's right, sixth grade. Well, do you remember sixth grade?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember sixth grade. Did you play marbles?
What I did was have fake corn cob pipes in our mouth outside while we played cards.
Yeah. So
but we
cards.
Didn't risk real money.
But you gambled. But you gambled. Well, you may have not risked real money. I remember in sixth grade there were kids who risked real money. They played, you know, they played with boulders, that's what they were called, which were large marbles, and you either got other marbles, and sometimes there was actually money in the pot.
I played a little bit of marbles.
So don't
you remember
that?
You won marbles.
But that's gambling. So
but what
they
is
did
the impulsivity
well,
in
what they did well, let me explain what they did. They looked at kindergartners and they rated them on a scale of impulsivity. Now, let's face it, all kindergartners are impulsive, right? But some are more impulsive than others. Some are, you know, you would look at as a parent, you might say, well, my child is off the wall. You know,
well, how did they decide who was impulsive?
Well, they had a scale. They had a scale, standardized scale. They studied 160
What did they
kids.
Do, look through the window and see how many were?
They had teachers who filled out questionnaires, and they asked questionnaires about how long they could sit in their chair.
Okay.
Where could they go? Could they answer certain things? Were they attentive in class? And they have a standardized questionnaire. And they looked at attentiveness, distractibility, hyperactivity, and the scale went from 1 to 9. That's what they did. Mm-hmm. 5 years later, they interviewed the parents of the kids, and they interviewed the kids to find out who engaged in a variety of activities. It was a follow-up. And lo and behold, a number of the kids were normal. They were all kind of normal kids. But the kids who were more impulsive were more likely to be playing cards, bingo, buying lottery tickets, playing video games for money, playing video poker for money, and placing bets on sports venues. In other words, placing bets on who's going to win a game, you know, one or another. And one point difference on this 9-point scale was a 25% increase in whether or not these sixth graders were betting.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, I think it's very interesting. Now, so what's the issue here? The issue here is impulsivity. Not necessarily hyperactivity, but probably impulsivity. Mm-hmm. And can you do something as a parent? Of course you can.
What?
Well, you can do something with a parent. If you realize if your child is too impulsive and seems to be more impulsive than the other fifth graders, is you talk to the teacher, you talk to the school psychologist, you talk to your friends, you talk to your mom and so on. You find ways to begin to sort of bring your child into the fold.
Easier said than done.
Oh, yeah, 100%. But as parents, we have to try to model our behavior for our children. And we often do that if we don't have the answer by going to other sources and authorities to help us. But it's clear that taking care of your child in kindergarten may make a difference in sixth grade and beyond.
1-800-462-7413. To a listener now, Zorba, in Madison, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for that call. How can we help?
Well, I am a 37-year-old female, and I consider myself fairly healthy and active. I exercise between 4 and 7 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
I lift weights, I swim, I bike. So recently I decided I was going to start doing triathlons, and I am overcome by shin splints. So I'm wondering, you know, I've tried some of the home remedies. You know, I've gotten new shoes. I have iced my legs. I've tried writing alphabets with my toes. But I'm wondering, number one, exactly what are shin splints? And number two, what I can do to prevent them?
Mm-hmm. Well, Zorba will answer those questions. But first of all that activity makes you look a lot younger than that 37.
Yes, I think so. I hope
so. Yeah, I'm telling you, it does. You don't look 37.
Tom has not x-ray eyes. He has radio eyes, so he can see through the radio to see exactly what you look like. Well, shin splints are fascinating because they affect people who basically jog and exercise and exercise all the time. And there's no absolute treatment for them. It's from the small muscle that is basically on the front of the leg. And what happens is when we use that muscle back and forth, they tend to cause micro breaks. If we looked inside the muscle, it would be inflamed. And the treatment is multiple. We'll give you exercises. Their exercises, we'll post them on our website, zorbapastor.org. Anti-inflammatories help. What's the total time you're exercising during the week?
Well, I generally, you know, when I'm at the gym, I'm there for an hour and a half or 2 hours each time.
How many days a week?
Let's say an average of 5 days a week.
Okay. That may be too many. You may be every other day. That may be what you do. At least every other day when it comes to your lower body exercise. When you go to the gym, when you're exercising, how long are you using your legs?
Not that much, actually. I swim a fair amount.
Swimming is good. Swimming is good. Yeah, will not make shin splints worse at all.
I wouldn't think so. And really, I've only been running or attempting to run twice a week.
Okay. Did you start to build up your muscles before you started to run?
No.
Okay. One of the other things you may want to do is build up the muscles in your proximal thigh, in other words, in the first part of your leg, because those muscles, you want to take more of the energy when you're actually pounding on the pavement. So weight exercises with your upper thigh muscles, with your quads, will be good. Then looking at jogging or lower body activity every other day gives your body a chance for rest. Doing the exercises that we're going to put on the website, which are stretching exercises, can make a big difference. And sometimes if that doesn't work, a little anti-inflammatory, 2 Aleve tablets twice a day will help you.
Okay, well, that actually brings up another question. I'm allergic to aspirin and aspirin-related products.
You can't take Aleve. That's exactly right.
I can't take Aleve.
No, now allergic meaning you broke out in a rash or it upset your stomach?
No, I have asthma.
You have asthma. Okay, so the answer is you cannot take any anti-inflammatories. So,
Tylenol doesn't really cut it, you know?
Yeah. And that's just what it is. Tylenol may not cut it, but anti-inflammatories are not going to work for you. So you've got to do the physical work, the stretching, as I said, strengthening of the upper leg, and go from there.
Perhaps I misled you. I do lift weights, and I was lifting weights. When I started triathlon training, I actually sort of dropped a lot of the weightlifting stuff. But I don't feel like strength in my quadriceps or hamstrings is really the problem.
Okay,
Then that means
what you have to do from a triathlon training point of view is go to an elliptical instead of running at least every other day, because the elliptical or the Stairmaster is going to give you quite a bit for what you're doing. Because what you want to do is you don't want to pound the pavement. So I would do what you're doing, swimming, elliptical, and Stairmaster, and I would limit the running so you can engage in the triathlon and not start the triathlon with shin splints, which we know is a no-no. And, of course, you're not expecting to hit the Olympic stride in the triathlon. You just want to complete it.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I did one this past weekend, and, you know, I walked 3 miles, and that was okay.
Right. That's you got to do what you got to do.
I was going to say, I hope you win, but you aren't counting on that, right?
No. I did very well in the swim portion, so, you know, I'm happy with that.
Sounds good.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Well, thanks for taking my call.
You bet. At 1-800-462-7413. Time once again now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. We have a listener myth today that deals with water bottles. It comes to us from Scott in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Scott writes, I was told by a friend that it's healthier to drink bottled water warm rather than cold. I found references to the dangers of drinking warm or hot tap water, but have found nothing on bottled water. Do you know if warm water really is healthier?
Well, the answer is warm water is not healthier at all. And I would not recommend you drink warm water. My mother told me the same thing. Don't drink hot water from the tap.
This listener is saying don't drink cold water.
Yeah, but it turns out it's hot water. And the reason is hot water can leach out lead from pipes. That's the issue. Older houses have more lead in pipes, but even new houses can have traces of lead in pipe. And although the risk is very, very small, the U.S. Department of Environmental Protection Agency says you shouldn't use it in formula, in cooking, or in drinking. You know,
this
basically,
is hot water we're
hot
talking
water.
About.
You should not use hot water. Cold water, yes, is fine from the tap. Hot water is not fine from the tap. So the myth that you can drink hot water is wrong. Its answer is you should only drink cold water from the tap.
There was a piece in the paper the other day, Zorba, not on this topic, dealing with water, bottled water versus tap water, saying, look, all communities strictly regulate tap water.
That's right.
Nobody knows what's in bottled
water. That's exactly right. Bottled water is not regulated the same way that community tap water is regulated. And community tap water in a good community, which is most of the communities, is safe because they monitor it every single day. So the answer is yes, tap water is safe. And the best tasting metropolitan water in the United States, Tom, are you ready to guess? In a taste test, what water tastes best when you compare bottled water and metropolitan water in tasters at Consumer Reports? What water comes out on top?
Well, I'll bet you it's tap water.
And which one? Which state? Which city?
Oh, which state?
Which city has the best tasting water in the world, in the country, rather? New York City.
Huh?
New York City, time and time and again, in professional tasters, comes out number one as the best tasting water in America. Go, New York!
How about that? If you have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust, send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Now, Zorba, a listener with us in Oliver Springs, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. What's up?
Well, I had a question about antibiotics and probiotics. My wife and I were both recently on antibiotics, and she did a little bit of research on taking probiotics with them, and what she found was that a website told her that you should take them, but only 12 hours after you take the antibiotic. And then I did a little bit of research as well when I was on them, and I was finding a site that said that you can take them with it with no ill effect on the antibiotic. And I just wondered what you could tell me about that.
What were you taking them for?
Well, my wife had what turned out to be a MRSA infection, which was pretty nasty. And I just had a little infection on my thumb. It wasn't that bad.
Uh-huh. Well, first of all, probiotics are what happens is when we take antibiotics, we can change the flora, the basic bacteria that live in our intestine. Mm. So the idea behind probiotics is it will replace that part of the intestinal flora that simply is not, you know, is basically getting destroyed by taking the antibiotics. So that really does have, a factor there. I don't think there's any evidence of when you should take the probiotics. There's not a lot of research on probiotics at all. Taking, you know, Activa or other live yogurt cultures probably does quite a bit. I've recommended that for years, and may do as much as probiotics when you're taking long-term antibiotics. And your wife had an MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staph aureus infection, and as you said, that can be quite serious. But I don't think the timing matters that much. The real issue is to make sure that when you're done with the antibiotics, you take probiotics for a few days afterwards. Because what you want to do is replenish the intestinal tract after the antibiotics are finished. And quite often the antibiotics are done. But if you take the probiotics for a few days, that can make a difference. So that's what I'd recommend. Great. Now, what are you taking them for? I mean, your wife had the infection, but why are you putting that stuff in your body?
Well, I had a little infection on my thumb.
Uh-huh. Which needed an antibiotic?
I went to a – well, I was – since my wife's a nurse. She's an ER nurse, and since – she got that MRSA infection month and a half ago. I've been really, you know, kind of paranoid about the superbugs. So I decided to just go to the clinic and, you know, get on an antibiotic so I could get it taken care of as quickly as possible to make sure that it wasn't something worse than what it turned out to be.
I think that was a good choice. You know, if you've got one infection in the house, it can turn into two. So good luck to you and your wife.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Appreciate the call. And before we leave for the week, Zorba, we have a citation from the Grammar Police. Mm. This cool. comes to us from Deputy Jeanette in Sheridan, Wyoming. She writes, I listen to Zorba's show every week and enjoy it very much. However, there is one word that Zorba uses incorrectly, consistently, and that word is regime. Recently, Zorba was talking to a listener concerning calcium, and he used the phrase calcium regime, when it should be regimen.
Oh. Well, it depends on whether or not you're French.
No.
I'm not
the
French.
Word is regimen.
Oh, it's not regime.
Yeah. And she continues, oh. I think of a regime as a government or the like.
Yes.
Regimen is more like a schedule or system for remedy.
Uh-huh. 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 So what is it? So I can't use the word regime anymore?
Not in that sense.
Really? I'm not allowed to? I can't
Well,
like,
you're allowed to, but you're going to get more of these.
That may be the case. Now, have you been to Sheridan, Wyoming?
No.
I have.
That doesn't mean you can use regime when it's supposed to be regimen.
They talk funny, though.
No, they
talk
don't.
Funny. Yes,
you
they
talk
do.
Funny.
They talk funny in Sheridan, Wyoming. I've been there. They talk funny.
If you'd like to join the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police regimen, send your warrants and an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us day or night at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Brad Kohlberg and Adam Friedrich, the Woodward and Bernstein of the radio world, are responsible for this hour, so blame them. Charles Monroe Kane is our executive producer, and our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you're with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
National support for Zorba Pastor on Your Health comes from the AED Superstore, helping people save lives with Philips HeartStart automated external defibrillators for business, school, travel, and home. Available at AEDSuperstore.com. Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0725Z.
PRI, Public Radio International.